Yeah, once the meeting opens, I'm ready to do an introduction and bring us to this agenda and then pass it on to Anne.
All right. I make a motion that we open up this special meeting again after our short little rest and move forward. Go ahead, Elizabeth. And Anne, thank you. This is from Judy Drain. Thank you so much. And thank you, Elizabeth, for putting all this together.
Thank you so much, Madam Mayor. I'm thrilled to be here.
I
We'll
second
go.
your motion.
No, we don't need a motion. The mayor just declares the meeting resumed.
There you go. All right. So let's see. So I'm going to just introduce Anne as we get started and people kind of get settled in. But Anne is here to present great town meetings through Jurassic Parliament. Anne McFarlane majored in Russian and Ancient Greek at the University of California, Santa Cruz. She received a Marshall Scholarship awarded by the British government and earned a second degree at Cambridge University in England. She then joined the US Foreign Service, serving as a diplomat in Pakistan and on the Soviet desk of the US State Department. After marrying fellow Foreign Service officer Lou McFarlane, Anne became a stay-at-home mom in the Congo, Tanzania, and Nepal. On returning to Seattle, Anne became a Russian translator and was elected president of the American Translators Association. Since developing Jurassic Parliament in 2000, she trains elected officials, staff, and nonprofit board members across the nation. Anne is a professional registered parliamentarian with Andrew Estep. She is the author of Mastering Council Meetings. And I will say that I was gifted that book as well as the little laminated cheat sheet when I was elected on town council. And it has been a very helpful resource. And I know about a year ago, I passed it on and lent it to our mayor. And I recommend it to anyone that is interested in it. And I'm really excited to have you here today, Anne. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. It's a privilege to be here, and I look forward to working with you over the next few hours, and we'll do our best to keep it lively. So our topic today is Great Town Meetings, and we're going to cover quite a lot, as you can see from this list of topics. And the first thing that we have is preparing for the meeting. So why are we here? My goal this evening is to invigorate you to run effective meetings to serve your community. I know you already run good meetings, but sometimes a little bit of new information can give new energy and invigoration. So that's what I'm hoping for. After taking this training, you'll be able to apply the principle that the authority of the group is more important than any single individual, follow best practices for discussion, respond to disorder or difficult people, make motions and amendments, avoid common citizen advisory pitfalls, and run effective public comment sessions. A quick disclaimer: the material contained in this presentation is based on the principles and practices of parliamentary procedure. I'm not an attorney, and nothing in this presentation constitutes legal advice. If your attorney tells you something different, then listen to your attorney. So, your town, and if I've got anything wrong here, you let me know. Your town is governed by a council consisting of 5 members with equal standing. One member is elected mayor. The mayor has the right to make motions, second them, take part in discussion, and vote. And we recommend that the mayor speak last on substance and refrain from making motions. Now, this is Jurassic Parliament's idea, it's not in Robert's rules. But we feel that it's better for the members to be making the motions. Your planning commission plays a significant role in your government, and it is subordinate to the town council. As I understand it, you have 3 staff members at present: the council clerk, the planning commission clerk, and the zoning administrator. And much of the work of the town is done by volunteers. You have a board of adjustment, a park committee, a cemetery committee, and others. So, in preparing for meetings, it is essential that staff prepare an agenda packet before each town council and planning commission meeting so that participants have the material that they are going to consider in a timely fashion. A week ahead is desirable, but if that's not possible, materials should be sent out at least 3 business days before the meeting. And of course, the members of the bodies have the duty of reading the packet in advance. So what goes in the packet? How to join the meeting, the draft agenda, the draft minutes of the last meeting and of any special meetings, reports on topics that are included in the agenda, reference materials, and any written public comments received before the deadline. Now, the clerks have the heavy responsibility of managing email notifications and version control of records. You must develop an effective archive system for emails, and you also may need to archive texts if they're sent on town business. It's essential to name each file with a distinctive title so you know what version is being considered. You don't want to call something report or report for meeting. You have to be more definite. This aspect of clerk work is not something that Jurassic Parliament focuses on, but you have a great resource in the Utah Municipal Clerks Association. I took from their website this information about certified records officer and training sessions. So I suggest that the clerks turn to this organization and get the information that they will need to be able to handle processing their records. This was one of the questions that was brought up. The agenda for the meeting is prepared by the leadership, but it's within the control of the council, subject to notice requirements, of course. And Robert's rule says that if you follow the standard order of business, you don't need to vote to adopt an agenda. But many bodies do vote. It takes a majority vote to adopt an agenda and a 2/3 vote to change it later in the meeting. This is a simplified version of the standard order of business. Approval of minutes, officers' remarks and reports, committee reports, unfinished business, we don't say old business anymore, and new business if your town includes this. Some bodies don't because of this reason. This is from the city of SeaTac in Washington State. The city council desires to provide adequate time for administration and staff analysis, fact-finding, and preparation. Except in extraordinary or unusual circumstances, all items that are not routine in nature shall, when presented, include a completed council agenda bill. So they don't want you popping up with new stuff on the spot. Now, do you all use a consent agenda? Can somebody let me know if you use that or not?
No, we do not.
Well, we will just skip right ahead then and go on to study sessions.
Might it be worth looking at it in case people choose to use it in the future if everyone else is okay. Because I think it is something that I think might be worth us looking at and seeing if we want to choose to use a consent agenda.
Okay. So I get asked sometimes, what's the difference between the regular agenda and the consent agenda? Well, the regular agenda lays out the items to be taken up at a particular meeting, and it follows your order of business. The agenda may include, as a single item, adoption of the consent agenda. A consent agenda lists items that are expected not to be controversial. And if any member requests that an item be removed from the consent agenda, it's done on request, and the item is then placed at its proper place in the regular agenda. Although some cities also create a line item to process removed items right after the consent agenda. But the key point is the consent agenda cannot be discussed or debated. It cannot be discussed or debated. You only put non-controversial things there. And it's adopted with a single vote. And the minutes of the meeting must list all the items that were approved. I saw a consent agenda once that said committee appointments were approved, but it didn't say who was being appointed to what committee. Voting for a consent agenda is just as much a vote as if you did ayes and noes. So they have to have all that information in the minutes. And you don't want to include reports in the consent agenda. The consent agenda should not include informational financial reports or reports from advisory or outside bodies. Instead, the clerk simply notes received for filing. And the reason is that a vote to approve, adopt, or accept a report means that the body accepts the report and its recommendations, if any, in their entirety. So when you get a monthly financial report, you don't have any way of knowing if it's accurate. You will vote on the auditor's report at the end of the year, but not on the monthly financial report. Elizabeth?
So an example of that, like one of the items that I would assume could be considered a consent item would be once a month we approve checks. And so the clerk prepares the checks that were issued that month. It's not a report in that it's not that we change anything. It's that we either accept it or we don't. Is that something that can be included in a consent agenda item or no?
Absolutely. And it often
that
is.
That was what I thought, but I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah, it's a list. It's not a financial report. It's a list.
Exactly. It's a list. Okay. Thank you.
Nancy?
I just might say the way we used to use the consent agenda was if we had a long discussion about a topic with a lot of information at one meeting, and we came to more or less a decision, we weren't having more discussion on it, we would then put it on the consent agenda at the next meeting, and we would make that motion in the earlier meeting. We would say, I move to put this item on the consent agenda, because we talked about it a lot, but it gave the council time to sort of think about it and put it on a future agenda. And then if somebody still had additional concerns or insight, we could remove it from the consent agenda, as you said, Anne. But if not, we'd had the discussion at an earlier meeting and it ended up on the consent agenda. We tried not to make decisions in the same meeting when we had a lot of the debate and discussion about it, because it provided more time, sort of our two-touch rule, if you will. So that was just a way that we used it back in Burien.
Thank you, Nancy. So many bodies hold study sessions either as a separate meeting or as part of a regular meeting. And this is a more relaxed approach in which you can explore possibilities and share information, but you don't take action. Discussion is more informal, but the chair must still make sure that no one dominates. And John Varenth was good enough to give me a list of some items that occurred in some of the study sessions he attended on another body: in-depth exploration of complex issues, citizen presentations, Q&A between board members and staff, information sharing about board member concerns, and recommendations from board to staff regarding items to present at future meetings. So that's something that you can consider. So this is the end of section one, and I'll just pause and ask if anyone has any questions or comments before we move on.
Hello, Judith Gow speaking.
Yes.
I have a question about the study session.
Uh-huh.
Is there any consideration needed regarding open meeting requirements?
Oh, it has to be open. It's a meeting of the council or the commission just as much as a regular session.
Okay, that wasn't stated there, so I wanted to make sure my assumption was correct. Thank you.
Yes, that's correct. Thank you. Great question. Now let's look at the meeting. So our workshop this evening, our method is this. We're in the League of Northwest Dino Cities. It's not entirely realistic. It's a fantasy, but there's some overlap with real life. It's like drawing with crayons. And you are going to be the members of the Dino D Town Council. So here's a map of the league. My late husband and I had a lot of fun preparing this. There are 70 cities and each one has its own project. And there's Dino D off Dinali Bay. It's kind of a riff on the Pacific Northwest. So it's the Town of Dino D regular council meeting. And our motto at the meeting is, we do our best for all our residents, whether we like them or not. So you're going to call the meeting to order. And I think this got out of the wrong space. Here, you're going to call the meeting to order with a gavel if you have one. You sit in the chair reserved for the person running the meeting. Chair has two meanings. It means the object on which you sit and you as the leader of the meeting. And this comes back to the days when only the prince or the potentate had a chair. Everybody else either stood or sat on the floor. So you are the chair. You wrap your gavel lightly one time and announce this meeting of the Dino D Town Council is called to order. You ask the clerk to take the roll and you announce that a quorum is present or not. It's the chair's duty to announce the quorum. So the quorum is the minimum number of voting members who must be present for business to be done. And for local governments, it's usually a majority, more than half, of the fixed positions on the council. So if you have a council of five, what is your quorum?
Three.
Three, exactly. And if it happened that one position was vacant, so that there were four members on the council, your quorum would still be three. And if two positions were vacant, your quorum would still be three. Now, quorum is different from votes cast. Quorum is a passive condition that allows you to take action, and the votes cast are the action that you take. And if you lose your quorum, you can't do business. Local government bodies must not create a walking quorum or a serial meeting. When members of the body talk or email with each other outside of meetings, such that a quorum is discussing the body's business, the Open and Public Meetings Act has been violated. You can talk to other people as long as the number is less than a quorum. Staff may send emails to all council or commission members, but it's critical that members do not use reply all, since this can lead to a serial meeting. And staff or a single member may not email or contact each member of the body individually on a given topic and collect their responses, unless it's a purely administrative matter, such as what time to meet or something trivial like that. Now, according to Robert's rules, the purpose of minutes is to record the actions taken by the body. Minutes record what is done, not what is said. And I received some additional information after preparing my first presentation. So I have some extra slides here on minutes, and I will send those to you as a supplementary list to add to your packet. So we recommend action or summary minutes, not detailed minutes. Minutes should record what is done, not what is said. Now, for certain topics, such as conflict of interest, the main points made should be included. But we believe that he said and she said is a waste of time and effort and makes minutes less useful. Here's an example from the city of Thornton, Colorado. The minutes shall not be a verbatim transcript of the proceedings. The purpose of the minutes shall be to record the city council's transactions rather than its deliberations. Therefore, debates, arguments, and discussion among the city council shall not be included. Now, detailed minutes are, and I'm going to talk about your minutes in a minute, but detailed minutes are a bad idea because it violates the fundamental purpose of minutes. It can create liability for the organization or individuals in case of a lawsuit. It tends to personalize and politicize the discussion. It can intimidate participants, preventing them from speaking freely. It absorbs too much staff time and takes the group's time, and it makes it harder to find the actions taken. Now, it's clear that the minutes of your town council and planning commission meetings serve an administrative purpose. You need more detail than Robert's rules requires, but even so, we suggest that you strive to capture the relevant details in summary form. List conclusions and future actions needed. Give names attached to those actions when appropriate, but avoid recording opinions. Avoid recording opinions. So this is what goes in the minutes, and this is part of the new material I'll send you. The name of the body, the place of meeting, the time at which the meeting started and ended, which members of the body were present, and if relevant, any absences, staff members present. The fact that a quorum was present. We recommend that, although Robert doesn't say you have to. A brief summary of staff oral reports and salient information, if desired. Text of all main motions taken up by the body and their disposition, passed, failed, referred to committee, and so on. If amendments were made, the final version of the motion as amended. You don't need to put in the detail of each amendment. Any points of order or appeals and their resolution. If the body went into executive session, the time of entering and leaving. And there's no need to include the words respectfully submitted. So again, I'll send you a file that has these two slides with the details. Now, in our view, it's appropriate to include late arrivals of the members, early departures, and the time if a member of the body steps out of the meeting in the minutes. The names of the public in attendance should not be included, and comments by the public should not be included. We'll have more on this in section 9. And here is an article on action minutes that is published on MRSC. It was jointly written by me and MRSC. MRSC, which was formerly called the Municipal Research and Services Center, is a private nonprofit organization in Washington State that provides advice to local government bodies. So now I'm going to stop this share in order to show you excerpts from three different types of minutes. Let me call that up. And I will be sending you this paper also after the session. So here are three different types of minutes. Here's action minutes from the city of Snoqualmie. You see recommended action, moved by Mayhew, second by Benson, passed. That's it. Very, very simple. Here is an example of summary minutes. Policy options. Brian Eberly reviewed threats. The commissioners considered. These are different topics that they considered. Then the commissioners presented numerous ideas for consideration and so on. No names in there. Then a discussion, the staff member explained about their minutes and they decided to do them according to Robert's rules. So I had to throw that in naturally. Now here is a third example of detailed minutes from the city of Bellevue. This is only a small excerpt from a 15-page document. You can see that they write down everything that the councilor said and what they expressed support and move staff and blah, blah, blah. So in our view and in Robert's view, that is a mistake. That is really a mistake. So that's something you have to decide. But we would recommend that you consider moving to a more summary type of minutes. Now, let me share the screen again and share it correctly. We also have a paper that was written some years ago called Guidelines for Meeting Minutes in Local Government, and I'll send you that as well in our packet after the session. So any questions so far? Okay, let's go on to meeting discussion, point of order, and appeal. Now we're going to start this off with a script reading, raising the parking fee. So I'm going to ask five of you to volunteer to read the parts in this script. And as we read it through, I'd like you to watch for rules for discussion, inappropriate remarks, point of order and appeal, and the chair being out of line. And I'll be the chair, and I can assure you she'll be out of line. Now, in real life, members must be recognized by the chair before speaking. But in this script, the numbers take the place of recognition. We just read through the numbers. It's in order to speed it up a little bit. So please let me know by raising your hand or typing in the chat if you're willing to read one of these parts.
Yes,
I'm okay, I'm not hearing anybody, so you have to speak up.
Gladys will be the elderly member.
Very good. Nancy?
I'll be the environmentalist.
John will be the banker.
And who is that?
John Varanth is going to be the banker.
Great.
Nancy, I think, would be environmentalist.
Elena, you could be something because you and John are sharing a mic.
I'll be something. I'll be the photographer.
Okay. Who is the photographer?
Elena.
Sorry, I didn't catch it.
Elena.
Elena, very good.
teacher who always sounded like a frog.
Then we have to share that.
Okay.
Judith, the child, the teacher.
So who is that who'll be the teacher?
Judith Guile, the teacher.
Great. Thank you so much. So now I'm going to stop sharing the PowerPoint and share the script on my screen, although I know that some of you have it already. Hold on. Here we go. Now, this is strictly a reading exercise. You don't have to do any improvisation, but if you feel like putting a little body English on your part and giving it some special spin, that is perfectly fine. So let me now share the screen.
And before you begin, there is one person with the hand up for a question.
Yes, please, Jeff. Can you unmute, Jeff?
Jeff, so when you're ready, just unmute yourself and ask your question. And if we miss you this round, just wait until after this exercise.
Okay. So can you all see the, here, there's something in the chat.
Raise his hand accidentally.
Oh, hand raised accidentally. Okay, good. Thanks. So can you all see the script, raise the parking fees?
Yep.
You got it? Okay. So I'll be the chair. And there's continuing pressure on our parking spaces in the downtown areas of the town of Dino D. The staff has reviewed the matter carefully. As you know, our current rate is $2 per hour. The staff recommends that the new fee be set at $20 per hour. Does anyone care to make that motion?
I move that the parking fee be set at $20 per hour.
Second.
Very well. It's been moved and seconded that the parking fee be set at $20 per hour. We will now have discussion on the motion. Environmentalist, as the maker of the motion, you have the right to speak first.
Well, I'm a believer in public transportation myself. I think that this increase will lessen congestion and also force more people to take buses or walk. It's a good idea for the environment and for our city.
Further discussion? The chair recognizes the elderly member.
I think this is a terrible idea. We've learned we just have 10 million surplus. Why would we increase parking fees and burden our residents this way?
Do you know that the parking fees in most towns of the league are $15 per hour? We are so far below the market that it's ridiculous.
Well, that's not a reason to go crazy and lay this burden on our residents. Many elder dinosaurs really are feeling the pinch. Our current tough economic times have hit them hard.
There's no point in being an old softie and begging for sympathy for the down and out. If they had an ounce of gumption, they would have saved up for their old age.
What a hard-hearted comment. Someday, you might be old and wrinkled and poor yourself. Have you no compassion?
All I have to say about that is nonsense, applesauce, and balderdash.
Point of order.
Here's your point.
These members are monopolizing this discussion. Under Robert's rules, no one can speak a second time until everyone who wishes to do so has spoken once.
The point is well taken. Members must speak in turn. Thank you, banker. Is there further discussion?
This is likely to put a crimp on the vitality of our business district. As a business owner myself, I'm really concerned about this. I speak against the motion.
I see those arguments, but I think we have to be prudent. I guess on balance, I'm in favor of this proposal.
Honestly, I think you dinosaurs are just living in the past. We ought to be preparing to have driverless cars, not raising the rates for our parking lots. You're just a bunch of has-beens.
Point of order, Chair.
State your point.
That was an insulting remark. According to Robert's Rules of Orders, all of us are obliged to speak with courtesy and respect, including the chair.
The point is well taken. The chair apologizes for her remarks. Is there further discussion?
In my opinion, this council is clueless. We have our heads stuck in the concrete. Given the way the stock market is trending, our surplus could just disappear. I hope everyone will agree to raise those rates.
You know, I've heard better discussions in my daughter's kindergarten class. It's clear that we don't have the sharpest knives in the kitchen drawer here.
Point of order.
State your point.
Members are insulting all of us by those remarks.
The chair will rule that the comments are indeed insulting. Members will kindly refrain from such improper statements.
I don't think all these rules are a good idea. They are keeping us from expressing our true opinion. You're an out-of-date dinosaur yourself, Chair.
The chair will rule that the words out-of-date dinosaur are insulting and may not be used.
Second.
Very well, the ruling of the chair has been appealed and seconded, so the members will decide. The chair has ruled that the words out-of-date dinosaur are insulting. All those who believe that this ruling should be sustained, say aye.
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 All those who believe that the ruling should not be sustained, say no.
No.
The ayes have it. The motion passes, and the ruling of the chair is sustained. Members may not use this term. Further discussion?
If we do this, the residents are likely to come and throw eggs at our houses, or even worse, I'm dead against it.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. All those in favor of raising the parking fee to $20 per hour, say aye.
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 Aye. All those opposed, say no.
No.
The ayes have it, the motion passes, and we will raise the parking fee to $20 per hour.
This is a big mistake. We're going to be sorry we authorized this.
The member is reminded that once a decision has been made, no further discussion is in order. There being no further business, this meeting is adjourned. So thank you for reading that so well. That was a pleasure. And let's get ourselves back to where we were. Hold on. Share screen. Now, a discussion like that should never happen in any of your meetings, and I'm sure that it never does. But just in case, let's look at this principle, the principle of equality. This is a fundamental principle of Robert's Rules. All members have equal rights, privileges, and obligations. So it follows from that that discussion in council and committee meetings is not a conversation. It's not a conversation. It is debate and has its own rules. And so we come to the first of our four fundamental guidelines. No one may speak a second time until everyone who wishes to do so has spoken once. And this is so important. I'm going to give it to you in red. No one may speak a second time until everyone who wishes to do so has spoken once. This is critical and this is transformative. But we don't follow it. Councils tend to discuss their affairs in conversational mode. In conversations, dominant people tend to dominate, and agreeable people tend to let them. So you must have a structure to make sure that everyone has an equal chance to speak. And this is both fair and efficient. It's also the best way to ensure that each person has an equal voice. It's a paradox. You know, Robert's Rules get slammed. Out of date, patriarchal, blah, blah, blah. But in fact, this is the best way to include everyone. It's formal, but it's inclusive, and it will make for robust discussion and advance your equity goals. Now, if that's not happening, as we saw in our little script, and you get a hockey match, the chair should intervene. Jessica, are you asking a question?
I don't actually have a question. I just was raising because you could see. Shelly next to me has a question.
So yeah. Who's in charge of making, is the chairman responsible that, you know, you can't tell if somebody's going to make a comment or not. You know, everybody has a chance, right?
Right.
Is it the chair's responsibility? Does anybody have another comment before somebody else speaks?
Yes.
Did they do that?
Yes, absolutely.
So it's the chair's responsibility to make sure everybody has their turn.
Yes, and we'll talk about how to do that in a bit.
Thank you.
Thanks for the question. Great question. So if you have a hockey match and the chair is not taking their responsibility, then a member can make a point of order. Now, we're going to go into this in more detail later, but in our system, our Jurassic Parliament system, the main motion is a T-Rex, and a point of order is a flying dinosaur. So it flies over the head of whatever motion is pending, and the chair bats it out of the sky. So let's look at how that looks. When another member breaks one of the rules, a member may make a point of order, and the chair rules on the point. It's a motion claiming that a procedural mistake has been made. And according to Robert, it can only be made by a member of the body, but we recommend that key staff be authorized also. The public may not raise a point of order. If somebody is standing up and shouting point of order, they are out of order. So let's have an example.
Point of order.
State your point.
That comment breaks our rules of decorum.
The point is well taken. Members may not use this term.
And so you saw this also in the
point of
yet, that point of order, state your point. That comment breaks our rules of decorum. And then the chair issues a ruling. The jargon is well taken. The point is well taken, or the point is not well taken. Now, many people are not familiar with point of order, but it's a very valuable motion. You can make this at any time except during voting, and you don't have to be recognized. You can actually call it out. You may even interrupt a speaker if necessary. You don't want to do that often or you'll become rather unpopular, but you can. And very important, it must be timely. You have to make it at the time of the offense. If you wait an hour or a day, it will be too late. So here's a tip for the chair. Use the third person to keep things neutral and lessen conflict. The point is well taken. The chair is stating the general rule. Don't say you're out of order or you made a mistake, because that will just create a personal antagonism. If someone is confused, if a council member has trouble explaining what the point of order is about, you can ask, what rule has been broken? What rule has been broken? And when in doubt, ask the group. The chair can always ask the group to decide if a point of order is correct or not. So member A says, that statement is just a bunch of baloney. Member B says, point of order. The chair says, state your point. B says the word baloney is insulting. C says the chair is in doubt. The chair says the chair is in doubt and will ask the group to decide. All those who believe that the word baloney is insulting say aye. All those who believe it is not insulting say no. The ayes have it. The word baloney is insulting and may not be used. Or the noes have it. The word baloney is not insulting and may be used. Now, the chair doesn't have to say point of order, because the chair already has the duty of maintaining order and decorum. So the chair just needs to take appropriate action. And in section 9, we'll talk about that. Also, as you saw in the skit, the chair is subject to the same rules. If the chair breaks one of the rules, a member may raise a point of order, and the chair rules on their own behavior, which seems odd, but that's the way the system works. Now, why do you make a point of order? You make a point of order if a rule has been broken. Do not make a point of order because you think someone has made a factual mistake or you disagree with what they said. Speak about that when it's your turn to discuss. And a point of order does not count as a turn in discussion. It's not speaking to the subject. And Robert says this, in ordinary meetings, it is undesirable to raise points of order on minor irregularities of a purely technical character if it's clear that no one's rights are being infringed upon and no real harm is being done to the proper transaction of business. So you don't want to become a nitpicker and a nuisance. Now, once the chair has ruled on a point of order, the only allowable form of discussion is to appeal the ruling. An appeal, in our view, is the most important motion in all of Robert's rules and the least known. Very few people know about it. The chair's rulings can be appealed. The chair enforces order and decorum, but the group is the final authority. Any two members can appeal a ruling of the chair. One member appeals and one seconds the appeal. Now, there is an exception. If the ruling is a matter on which there cannot be two reasonable interpretations, the ruling cannot be appealed. For instance, if you have a rule in your bylaws that says that a person may only serve one term as mayor, and somebody nominates the current mayor for a second term, and the mayor says, no, we can't do that, you can't appeal that because it's in the bylaws. So here's an example. Chair, point of order. State your point. My esteemed colleague has used the term cream-faced loon in referring to the secretary. According to Robert's rules, insults are not allowed in debate. Well, the point is well taken. Members will refrain from using improper language. Chair, I appeal the point of order on the grounds that cream-faced loon is a literary reference from Shakespeare and not an insult. Second, very well, since the ruling of the chair has been appealed, the group will decide. Note that appeals pertaining to proper use of language and decorum may not be debated, which is a good thing. If we could argue about it, we'd be there all night. All those who believe that cream-faced loon is an insult, say aye. All those who believe that this phrase is not an insult, say no. The ayes have it. The ruling of the chair is upheld, and members may not use this term. Or the noes have it. The ruling of the chair is not sustained, and members may use this term. Clerk, please record this outcome in the minutes. You're supposed to keep a record of this because it becomes a precedent for the future. Now, notice a funny thing about this appeal. The vote is whether the decision of the chair shall be sustained. It feels as if it should be whether the person making the appeal is right, but no, you're voting on whether the chair is right. So, point of order is made by one member, but an appeal needs a second. Point of order and appeal are processed immediately. No other business can take place until they're dealt with. And points of order and appeals do not count against a member's turn to speak in debate. So point of order cannot be debated. Appeals pertaining to language, decorum, and the order of business cannot be debated. When an appeal can be debated, the process is different from anything else in Robert's rules. So if you become skilled at using appeal, you'll want to study that. So we believe that point of order and appeal are the heart of democracy. They are the essence of our system, whereby it is the group itself that is the final authority and not the chair. So are there any questions or comments about point of order and appeal? And maintaining order during discussion. Okay, well, let's look at how to do this. We have 6 points that we recommend for you. Seek recognition before speaking. No one may speak a second time till everyone who wishes to do so has spoken once. No interrupting, no sidebar conversations. Set time limits, and courtesy and respect are required. So how do you seek recognition? You raise your hand and you wait to speak until the presider, the chair, calls your name, nods at you, or gives some other sign that you have permission to speak, that you have the floor. And online, you can use the raise hand function or raise your physical hand. For Zoom on the telephone, press *9. Now, when you have not been recognized, you have a duty to remain silent. This comes as a shock to some people. And the exception is a point of order when it's essential. So this is a wonderful paper that I'll include in your packet, Rights and Responsibilities of the Member. And it goes into those in detail. We had our fundamental guideline. No one may speak a second time till everyone who wishes to do so has spoken once. So that means no crosstalk between members. No crosstalk. Members are not speaking to each other. So how are you going to do that? Well, the chair can keep track of who has spoken and who wishes to speak using a chart. Or the chair can empower the vice chair to do this. It's good training for them. Here's an example of a speaking chart. When I run our choir board meetings, I have it all ready and I just check off each person as they speak. And then I know who has not had a chance, and you're free to adapt this for your own purposes. Another great method is the round robin. The chair goes around the table, asking each person in turn for their opinion. People may pass and speak at the end. So if you do that, it's important to have a pencil in hand to jot down points or questions for when your turn arrives. And the chair must wait their turn also. Sometimes the chair answers each person back, which is quite wrong. And this rule applies to questions and answers and discussions with staff. You don't want to have any two people hijack the meeting. Sometimes a council member or a commission member and a staff person will go back and forth for 15 minutes, and that's not a good idea. When a member has the floor, they have the right to speak until they've completed their comments. Members may not interrupt each other, and staff may not interrupt either. The chair may interrupt members when it's necessary to bring them to order, and members may interrupt to make a point of order when it's essential. So we're not going to have any sidebar conversations, no whispering, no texting to each other or people outside during meetings. Yes, Jessica.
Hey, really, it's Darren. You can use their glasses right here. Hold on. Sorry, I just know that you can only see me. So
if everyone has to speak either round robin or another method, what happens if the chair is trying to get clarifying information from one member and there's a back and forth, like, well, did you contact XYZ? And okay, what do they say? Things like that. Like, how do you, there doesn't seem like there's really need or room for the other people to speak when you're just trying to get some clarifying information.
Well, the chair has the duty of helping everybody understand what's going on. And when we say no one may speak a second time, that doesn't really include the chair, because the chair has to speak in terms of their facilitation. So you could have a brief interlude where the chair is going back and forth with somebody about some factual matter, but as long as it's not an argument or a discussion about the merits of the issue. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And thank you for the question. And certainly no texting to each other or people outside during meetings, and no posting on social media during meetings. And you had better consider whether you're, if you're using chat during meetings, whether that's a public record that must be preserved. Unless technical considerations prevent it, which they certainly can, I know, in remote areas, all council members should keep their camera on while participating online. Otherwise, you're lurking. You're observing your colleagues without yourself being observed. And this is disturbing and creates an unpleasant emotional imbalance. This also ensures that you maintain quorum. Sometimes at an online meeting, people slip away to feed the cat. Another advantage is that it prevents someone lifting a glass and having a glass of vino during the meeting, although you can't prevent that for sure. I worked with one council where a council member was putting vodka in her water glass, as evidenced by the fact that she became ever more jolly as the meeting went on. So in that case, the chair had to have a private discussion with her. Now, I know that structuring discussion in these ways can be frustrating, and board members sometimes say, oh, I wish we could just hash it out and have a free-form discussion. Well, the Open Meetings Act and the press of time mean that usually this won't serve your board well, but sometimes there is benefit in the conversational style, or as it's called, informal discussion. It can be useful at study sessions or in committee meetings, as long as the chair ensures that no one dominates. But I recommend that you do not make the conversational style your ordinary or default style of discussion. It's the duty of the chair to expedite business in every way compatible with the rights of members. So we recommend that you set time limits. Estimated times for agenda items: 10 minutes, 15, 20, but always put all times approximate, because you don't want to get yourself hidebound by those limits you've set up. We recommend time limits on individual council member speeches, 3 or 5 minutes. Now, if none of you are long-winded, you may not need this, but sometimes somebody comes along. I worked with one planning commission where the longest serving member enjoyed giving 20-minute speeches explaining the histories of the ordinance. So the other people were very happy to learn that they could put a stop to that. Time limits cannot be debated. You can't debate a time limit, but you can suspend or change it by a two-thirds vote without debate. Now, in large assemblies, you know, 20, 30 people, each member may speak twice on each motion per day. In small boards, this limit does not apply. You can speak as many times as you wish to, provided that you're following the no one may speak a second time rule. And some councils who have lots of material to cover adopt a two-time limit, but you could suspend that by a two-thirds vote without debate. So here's our paper that we'll send you, Time Limits Create Productive Meetings. I also want to mention unanimous consent. It's a form of voting. It's a kind of a fast track, and it's very efficient for minor procedural matters. Say you're the chair, and you sense that maybe a recess would be a good idea. The chair can say, if there's no objection, we'll take a 10-minute recess. So if you agree, you remain silent. Your silence means consent. If you don't want to proceed in that way, you say objection, and then the chair recognizes that they have to take a vote on it. So the chair abandons the fast track to use the regular method. But those phrases, without objection, or if there's no objection, can be very, very helpful. Another fundamental guideline is that courtesy and respect towards everyone are required. This is essential. And so these remarks are inappropriate. It is inappropriate during government meetings to make personal remarks about other members, except for conflict of interest, and I'm sure you have a policy on that, or you should. You cannot make discourteous remarks, insulting language, or attacks. You can't use inflammatory language, language that gets people's blood pressure up. You can't criticize past actions of the group unless the subject is under discussion, and so everyone is talking about it, or the member is about to propose to amend or rescind the action at the end of their speech. So you can say, building that skateboard park was the worst thing our town ever did, and I move we tear it down. That's okay, but you can't say just randomly, building that skateboard park was the worst thing our town ever did. Then the last one, number five, is remarks that are not germane or not relevant to the discussion. That's kind of the umbrella that covers everything else. So here's another paper for you, Inappropriate Remarks on Local Government Councils, that I'll send you. Now here's an example of an inappropriate remark.
That's a flat, outright lie.
So Robert says, the measure, not the member, is the subject of debate. Measure meaning the thing we're talking about. The moment the chair hears such words as fraud, liar, or lie used about a member in debate, he must act immediately and decisively to correct the matter and prevent its repetition. So you've got to really take action. Now, what about the deer in the headlights problem? You know, you hear something and you know it's off, but how do you quickly identify it and have the right words to say? So we have this laminated cheat sheet, which Elizabeth was kind enough to mention. It's a product that's available for sale on our website. And I have a friend who calls it my placemat, but it lists inappropriate remarks and mistakes on the left-hand side. And then there are three columns. And one column is what you can say when you're the chair if somebody says something out that's wrong, what you can say if you're a member speaking about another member, and what you can say if you're a member speaking about the chair. This is the only place I know of that has this information. So it's laminated, and it also has a motions chart on the back. We call it our wait, what should I say cheat sheet. So it helps to remember that the focus of our meeting is words on paper. Focus on the motions and not on the people who make the motions. And we recommend that council members take this approach outside the meeting also. Focus on actions taken and do not criticize colleagues outside the meeting. If any question arises whether a remark is appropriate or not, or a comment is germane, the chair rules subject to appeal. The chair may also turn immediately to the group to ask the members to decide. Ultimately, it's the group's call. Now, one important point, we're speaking here about discussion within council and commission meetings. These prohibitions do not apply to the public when they're giving public comment, and we'll talk about that in Section 8. So I'm going to send you sample discussion guidelines for local governments, and you have permission to cherry pick anything from that that might be helpful for you in setting up your town's guidance on how you want to operate. So that's the end of this section, how to do this, and now we're going to pause briefly and see if we can hear how these ideas seem to you. Is there anything in here that's helpful? Anything that you'd like to discuss? Gladys?
No, I'm fine.
Anybody else? Anybody online with a thought or a comment?
I appreciate the accessibility of it. I think that sometimes when you look at Robert's rules and you look at the way that the information is presented and what you should be doing, that it seems intimidating or unknown. And I think that your presentation of it makes it very palatable and useful for our town and how we need to move forward.
Great. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. That's certainly what we aim for.
This is Judy.
Uh-huh.
I think the breakdown of all of this is great, and the paperwork, everything that you provided, Anne, this is really great to be able to go back to and refer to. It's awesome. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. And as I said, I'll send a few extra slides and some reference materials in the next day or two. Thank you so much. Judith?
Yeah, so my comment is been in meetings where we've kind of are too close to the subject and are debating or discussing it and so on, and the chairman loses sight. So anybody, what I'm hearing, anybody can kind of call it out and just kind of point her out, right?
Or absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Point of order. This discussion seems to be not germane, not relevant to the topic, or we are not focusing on the issue here. Or
but you can overdo that too, right?
What's that?
You can overdo that point of order, couldn't you?
Oh, sure. And unfortunately, sometimes people kind of get, you know, the bit between their teeth. They take this training and they start making points of order all the time. And that's a mistake. That's a mistake. Yeah. And that's why I had that slide on why should you make a point of order? Because one group I worked with, they thought that that was their cue to say, point of order, that's not true. Well, no, that's not what you use it for. It's because a rule has been broken. So, of course, first you have to know the rules. So,
and this is Peg Smith. I have a question. I'm clerk of the Planning Commission, so it's a staff-related question.
Yes.
I'm curious about to what extent it's appropriate for staff to interrupt the proceedings, or I guess in the case I would make a point of order or something. Oftentimes it may just be a simple procedural matter, or it seems in my case more often than not I'm providing supplemental kind of historical material for the body, since I've been around longer than most of the commission members have. So I don't know to what extent it's really appropriate of me to interrupt the proceedings and make those kind of comments.
So that's a great question, and it also was asked in the preliminary questions, and I will treat it when we come to the part on staff role. So I'll wait till then, if I may. Okay, well, thank you, and thank you, Elizabeth. I'm very happy to have this being recorded, and it will be something for you in the future. So any other questions or comments? All right, so what we're going to do now then is close the chat here. There is a thing in Robert called stand at ease. And it's not a formal recess. It's just a momentary pause. So we're going to stand at ease for 10 minutes. You can fill your water glass or whatever, but I have work for you. During this time, during this little stand at ease, please choose two roles that you are willing to play during the motions practice. So you all should have, it was sent out to you, a file called JP Roles, and it has 50 roles in it. And you don't have to print it out, although it is handy if you have a printer to print out one or two for yourself. But just pick a couple that you'd be willing to play. So I have it now as 6:35. So we will resume at 6:45. We'll jump right into motions and amendments. And then after that, we'll do some motions practice. So I don't know if you want to keep recording, Jessica, or if you want to stop. This is just a 10-minute break here.
I'll pause it.
Okay. So I'll see you all back very soon. I'd like you to... Ooh, right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. 8 steps to process emotion. So I would like you to internalize these 8 steps to process emotion. You want to be sure that you have them in your mind because they come up over and over again. And in your packet, if you printed it out, there's a worksheet. So you can fill in the blanks on the 8 steps worksheet. The member makes the motion. Another member seconds the motion. The chair states the motion. The members debate and or amend the motion. The chair restates the motion and calls for the vote. The members vote on the motion. The chair states the results of the vote, whether the motion passes or fails, and what happens next as a result of the vote. And then the chair states the next item of business. So how many times do the members hear the motion?
Four.
How many times?
Three.
They hear it 3 times. When the member makes it initially, when the chair states it before discussion begins, and when the chair states it before the vote. Now, here's our main motion. Residents will be authorized to build catios in their private yards, and it's a T-Rex. So suppose a member is really confused and wants to know what's going on here. The member makes a point of information. Chair, point of information. I'm confused. What exactly is a catio? And the chair answers, a catio is a patio for cats. Here's an example. There's a nice little catio. Now notice that point of information is a question. It's also called request for information. It can't be used to give information. Sometimes people say, point of information, the town council ought to know that when we tried this 10 years ago, it was a big disaster, blah, blah, blah. That's debate. That's not a question. So if someone starts to do that, the chair can say, what information does the member need in order to decide how to vote? What information does the member need in order to decide how to vote? So step 3 is very important. The presider must repeat the motion or have the clerk repeat it. After step 3, the motion belongs to the group as a whole, not to the person who made it. And when you repeat it, everyone will know what we're actually discussing. So we're going to start discussion on our motion. The general contractor says, oh, I feel that catios will allow our dear feline friends to experience the outdoors without getting hurt or endangering other wildlife. I urge my colleagues to vote in favor of this motion. And there's more discussion. The photographer says, I'm in favor. My cousin has built a catio, and her little pet Fuzzy is completely at home in it, as you can see from this picture. There's Fuzzy enjoying her catio. Architect says, I think this is a terrible idea. Catios are intrusive and will ruin the look of our town. Here's an example I saw when I visited Dino Dome last week. We don't want this kind of ugly building in Dino D. So the architect is against it. So we have discussion on the motion. And then when it seems that discussion is finished, the chair asks, is there any further discussion, or are you ready to vote? And then, if no one speaks up, takes the vote. So these are kind of rhetorical questions to see if anyone has more to say. So I want to say that step five is also very important. The chair must repeat the motion before the vote is taken because of this point that I made earlier. Everyone should know what exactly we're voting on. So the chair repeats the motion. The chair says, all those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. The chair announces the results of the vote, whether the motion passes or fails, and what will happen next as a result of the vote. And then the chair announces the next item of business. So the ayes have it, the motion passes, and residents will be authorized to build catios in their private yards. Or the noes have it, the motion fails, and we will not implement this proposal. Now notice that if it's a voice vote, the chair must call for the negative vote, even if it seems obvious that the vote is unanimous. Sometimes you hear, all those in favor say aye. Oops, it's unanimous. Don't do that. Don't do that. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. There is no fixed rule about how to record the vote in the minutes unless Utah state law requires you to do it a certain way. Under Robert's rules, you can say the motion passed or the motion failed, the motion passed by 3-2, the motion passed with members Smith, Jones, and Robinson voting in favor and members Green and Black voting against. But don't do this. The motion passed with members Green and Black voting against. Don't do that. If you're going to give some votes, then list them all. Notice that nothing can be interrupt the voting process. I saw in one of your sets of minutes that a member voted no and gave her reasons. That's not correct. Members are not allowed to explain their vote during the vote or afterwards, and even a point of order must wait until the result of the vote is announced. Now, a member may change their vote up until the time the chair announces the result. After that time, it takes unanimous consent of the body, everyone agreeing, for the member to change their vote. And once the chair has moved on to the next item of business, it's too late to change a vote. Somebody wrote me about her commission where they were letting people at the next meeting say, I think I'd like to change my vote at the last meeting. That's completely wrong. So I see a hand up here. Yes?
Thank you. No, it's really me. Sure. Okay. Sorry, Ann. So I just wanted to make sure. So when you just said voting, even if you, okay, so you went through, yes, yes, no, I'm actually not going to vote on this because I don't agree.
Can't say that.
Yeah, you just say no. And later you can say why no, or just you never say why you voted no.
You say why you don't like it before.
Yep. Okay.
You don't like a motion, you explain that during the debate.
Okay. And it goes that way with yes and no. Like, so either way, by the time that you discuss it, then when you vote, you're either just literally saying yes or no.
That's it. Or you're abstaining, which we're going to cover in a minute.
And then the same thing. So if you're abstaining, do you say why you're abstaining or do you just abstain?
Well, if you have a, let me do the abstain slides, then we'll see if there's any more questions.
Okay. Okay.
Under Robert's rules, to abstain is to do nothing. Abstentions are not counted, and the chair doesn't even call for abstentions. But if you're a public body, likely you will call for and record abstentions. And if you're abstaining because you have a conflict of interest, that should be in the record. If you have a conflict of interest, you should recuse yourself from the vote. Recusal is a special form of abstention. But talk with your attorney before the meeting. Don't spring it during the meeting itself. I had some rules that were very helpful about that. And it may be that recusal is not enough. There's an article by MRSC, that organization in Washington State, resolving financial conflicts of interest. Is abstaining from voting enough? So you might find that of interest. MRSC was formerly the Municipal Research and Services Center. It's a private nonprofit organization in Washington State that provides advice to local government bodies. So it's very relevant even for people outside Washington State. So does that answer your question, Jessica?
Yeah, it does. Thank you so much.
Okay. Now, any questions so far on motions?
What does it look like if somebody votes yes and then votes no, or vice versa? How does that, they just, well, I mean, because you usually go through the whole group, yes, no. So when would they change their vote?
So do you use votes by voice vote or by roll call?
Yeah, voice, but it's kind of a roll call. We do a roll call.
Okay.
We vote by saying our names because we're also on Zoom. And we pretty much have a pattern that we go through the whole group. So that's a voice call. Yeah.
Okay. So Smith, aye. Jones, aye. Robinson, no. Green, aye. Black, aye. So then you have four in favor and one against. And the chair announces that that's the result. And so the motion passes. Now, if Green suddenly decides before the chair makes the announcement, Green says, just a moment, chair, I would like to change my vote to no. They can do that if the chair has not yet announced. It's the chair's duty to announce the result, not the clerk. The clerk may take the roll call, but the chair announces the result. Now, after the chair has been announced and then Green changes their mind, Green can say, oh, you know, really, I'd like to vote no. Then the chair will ask, is there any objection if Council Member Green changes their vote to no? Unanimous consent, because you need unanimous consent to change your vote after the chair has announced it. So, you know, roll call is pretty good, I think. I'm noticing in the chat, Elizabeth's question, we used voice vote and switched to roll call for online and hybrid, especially because you really want to be careful with online and hybrid meetings.
Okay. Yeah, I have a question. In those eight steps for making a motion, at what point do you write it down? Like if a motion is supposed to be written before.
Right. So if the member is forethoughtful enough, the member might write it down before even making it initially. But if not, it could be before step three. I move that we have a summer camp for delinquent dinosaurs. Second, then the chair would say, would the member be good enough to write that down?
Okay, so during the debate section.
Well, that's pre-debate, actually.
Okay, when the chair is stating it.
Right.
Is there, so the person who makes it, let's say they have it written down in their own notebook, is there a way that we should try to get it onto the screen or something so everyone can see it?
Yeah, you should. And one is if you are using chat during your meetings, a person can write it into the chat so that everybody can see it.
Okay.
I have one more. Just
really nice. Sure.
Okay. And in the meeting minutes where we did, like, wrote no and then gave a description.
Uh-huh.
Did I take that out?
No. Just don't do it again.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay, now suppose that you want to change that motion. Suppose that you think it's not quite right. Then you're going to offer an amendment. Now, do you use amendments very much?
Yes.
Okay, good. So in Jurassic Parliament, we represent amendment by Dimetrodon. You amend a motion to improve it, unless you're the U.S. Congress, but we're not going to go there. So applies to the main motion. The amendment must be germane. That's a jargon word meaning relevant. And anyone may move to amend, even the person who made the motion. You might look a little foolish if you make a motion and then amend it 5 minutes later, but there's no prohibition against it. So the engineer says, I move that we amend the motion by adding the words, provided that the plan for each catio is approved by the design review board. So if it's adopted, it will read, Residents will be authorized to build catios in their private yards, provided that the plan for each catio is approved by the design review board. So there are four different ways to amend. You can add or insert words. In this case, we're adding, we're putting them at the end. If you insert them, you put them in the middle. You can strike out words. You can strike out words and insert words in their place. Or you can substitute, where you put in a whole different paragraph. We do not recommend this. Substitute often ties people up in knots. But the tricky part is this. The amendment is processed using the same 8 steps that we just saw for the main motion. You see why it's so great to get to know them. But we vote on amendments before we vote on the main motion. It seems kind of crazy. We haven't even decided about catios yet, and we're already changing the proposal. Well, the idea is to make the main motion as good as possible, to perfect the motion. So the amendment blocks the main motion. The amendment here blocks the main motion, and we're going to take it up and consider it, and then we'll move on. So I'm going to stop the share just so I can demonstrate this more fully. Here's our main motion. Residents will be authorized to build catios. Here's our amendment, provided that the design is approved by the design review board. So we discuss and debate this amendment. All those 8 steps we go through just the same. If we like it and we pass it, it becomes a part of the main motion. Then we have an amended main motion. Someday I'm going to have Velcroized dinosaurs so I can stick it together and really show how it's one thing. But if we don't like it, if we vote no, we toss it away, and then we go back to the main motion. We go back to the main motion that we had. So this is actually the origin story for Jurassic Parliament. I was trying to show the board that an amendment precedes the main motion and is voted on before the main motion. And it was just when that movie was so popular. And I was cleaning my son Steve's bedroom and I saw his dinosaurs and I thought, oh, you know, this could be the main motion and this could be the amendment. This is actually an original Jurassic Parliament Dimetrodon. You can see the JP there. So I stole his dinosaurs. He forgave me. And I owe the whole thing to Steven Spielberg and my son Steve. That's where it all came from. So the amendment blocks the main motion. And people sometimes get confused and don't realize that after voting on the amendment, the process continues. Once the fate of the amendment has been decided, debate continues on the main motion. So more amendments are possible. Once you've dealt with one amendment, you may have others, provided that they apply to a different aspect of the main motion. Perhaps we could have an amendment to start this in 2025. It would be a different aspect, not the same thing. It takes special actions, which we're not covering today due to time constraints, like reconsideration, to go back and change something we've already amended. But we could certainly have 2 amendments to our main motion, or 3 or 4 or whatever. So after all amendments have been processed, the body still must vote on the amended main motion. Now, do you ever have friendly amendments? Does anybody ever say, I want to offer a friendly amendment? If not, that's great, because there's a nasty custom out there whereby somebody says, may I offer a friendly amendment? And the chair turns to the maker of the motion to ask if they will accept it. That's completely wrong. The maker and the seconder don't have any special powers. So once the motion has been stated by the chair, the maker and seconder have the same rights as any other amendment. Now, just to mention that according to Robert's Rules of Order, details of each amendment and how it was voted on are not included in the minutes. Yay! Good news for clerks. Instead, you just say, after discussion and amendment, the following motion was adopted. After discussion and amendment, the following motion was adopted. Now, suppose that we're in the middle of discussion on this amendment and somebody says, I call the question. Do you ever have that? Does anybody ever say, I call the question? Well, if not, that's good, because it's also misused. This is a motion to stop debate and vote immediately. And the technical name is call the previous question. Sometimes people interrupt others to make this motion, which is not allowed. You have to be recognized. And people often process this motion wrong. You can't simply cut off debate by saying question. People say question, the chair says, okay, we have to vote right now. That's completely false. So this motion requires a second. It cannot be debated or amended. Thank goodness. We can't debate on whether to debate. And then it takes a two-thirds vote to pass. All right. So any questions so far on motions and amendments? Doing okay?
I have one question. So in a meeting, you make a motion, goes through, it passes. And in the next meeting, there's a request for an amendment on the prior motion. Is that a possibility?
Well, there is a motion called amend something previously adopted.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And we have a paper on that on our website. Okay. And Jeff has a question. And old Robert's rules allows amendments up to the time that the chair announces the vote. Certainly not. Certainly not. Once the chair starts taking the vote, that's it. We're not going to have any more amendments. All right. So now we're going to have some practice in using the surplus. We're going to move down south to the city of Dinopolis. They have a $10 million surplus. And the question is, what will the city do with it? So I'm going to stop the share. Now.
And can I ask you one more question really quickly about amendments?
Sure.
So I wrote this down from our last meeting we had last week, actually, because I was wondering what to do about it. It seems like sometimes when we're in the discussion, which seems like the time to make the amendment, it's almost like we want to have another vote because someone will suggest something so different from what was originally proposed. And I guess, like, are we supposed to just debate that out? Or, like, the example I'm thinking of was we were just changing the title of a document and someone suggested one title. And then someone suggested another title, and it's almost like we didn't know what to do, like if we should just vote on the one or vote on the other. Can you sort of like vote within your discussion, or how do you, like, when people have different ideas, how do you decide, I guess?
Well, that's a great question. So amendments are offered during discussion. Amendments are offered during discussion. So we're discussing the motion and somebody proposes to amend the title. I move that we amend the title to say Purple Recreation Building rather than Fun Center. So that's just an amendment. You just discuss the amendment, and if it gets a majority vote, it passes, and then the title is changed. Or if it fails, you stick back to the old title. If you have more choices, if you have three possible titles, there's a method called fill in the blank. Fill in the blank. Which is in our, I don't think it's even in our book, but it's on our website. So if you go to the Jurassic Park website and you search for blank, filling the blank, you'll find that method. And it's a very good way to choose among different options. Say you are thinking of buying a piece of property and there are five different prices that people are willing to pay. There's a way of processing them, and it's very efficient. Okay?
Next question. Judith speaking.
Uh-huh.
Are there any restrictions on amendments to make sure that the new wording doesn't totally negate the proposed?
So that's a great question, Judith. You cannot amend a motion by putting the word not in it. You can't amend a motion to make it the exact opposite. And I think there's six kinds of things you can't do with amendments. But Robert's Rules allows, perhaps unfortunately, that you can change an amendment. You can change a motion as long as your proposed amendment is germane. So, for instance, say you have a motion to commend Ann McFarlane for her fine presentation. You can move to amend it and by striking out the word commend for her fine presentation and say censure her for her terrible presentation. And it's considered germane because it both relates to her presentation. So some bodies do adopt a rule that says no amendment may be entertained, which changes the intent of the original motion. But if you're working according to Robert, you can do that. You can do that. So let's just jump right in, because I'm a little bit behind on my schedule and I want to keep on track here. Let's jump right in, and I hope that you all have picked a role that you're willing to play. So I'm going to be the chair. We're down in Dinopolis, the capital city. You're the members of the Dinopolis City Council, and we've got $10 million. So what should we do with it? So I invite you to seek recognition. You have to raise your hand. And then Jessica?
I just wanted to, so when we went to print it off, I just didn't realize how many pages it was. Will you share your screen so we can read it, or should I bring it up on my screen?
Well, there are 50 pages in it, and I want people to pick one.
Yeah.
So they should share it. They should look at it on their own screen.
We don't have screens in here. There's only like two. The rest online do.
Okay. Did you print some? Did you print any of it?
No, I could.
Well, we'll lose too much time, I think.
Okay. Do you have enough people online to take parts?
Are there enough?
That's what we'll do, I think. We'll play with the people online, and the rest of you can chime in with amendments or whatever. So in the what we had before was a script, you know, reading this, reading that. This is different. This is totally free form. You can say whatever you like. You can make any emotion that you like, and you have permission to behave badly. So I invite you to seek recognition. The chair will call on you, and then tell us who you are. Are you the bungee jumper? Are you the attorney? Are you the dancer? And then make a motion, and then we'll have a discussion and amendment on the motion. So Jeff, do you have your hand up? Because if so, I'm calling on you. No? There.
I'm a bit slow to use this system.
That's okay. That's okay. So who would you like to be?
Are you calling on me?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'll be a ferry boat captain.
All right. So do you have a motion to make, Mr. Ferry Boat Captain?
I move that we provide funds for the dredging of Fossil Creek.
Is there a second?
I'll second it, Jim.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded that we provide funds for the dredging of Fossil Creek. Mr. Ferryboat Captain, do you care to speak to your motion?
Yeah, I think by doing this, the ferries can make their way across Fossil Lake and up the rivers to the other communities, making it a little bit easier for folks to get down to us.
Sounds great. Further discussion on the motion. Elizabeth.
I move that we amend the motion by adding the words, and that we create a special committee to monitor the results of this project.
So who are you, by the way? Which role are you playing?
Oh, am I supposed to be reading the sample amendment from
it's fine, but I just need to know who you are.
I've read the one from the ferry boat because I thought we were supposed to be on the same page. Sorry.
I'm the ferry boat captain. You can't be
captain. So you want me to pick a different... Well, I'm a festival director, and I'm going to repeat that. Sorry, I messed up.
No, so right.
I move that we amend the motion by adding the words publicly for the Dinopolis Dreaming Festival be included in all project materials. That's what happens when you don't read something prior to reading it.
Well, that amendment is not really germane, and so we will not be taking it up, but we certainly would consider any other amendment that other members might care to make. Nancy.
I move to amend.
Who are you?
I am the gardener.
Yes.
I move to amend the motion to recommend that the dredging materials be distributed throughout the community in order to plant more fruit trees.
Is there a second? Come on, somebody.
I'll second that motion.
Thank you. So we have now a motion to amend by adding the words, and the dredging materials to be distributed throughout the community for fruit trees.
I'm the fern collector.
Thank you, fern collector. So do you care to speak to your motion, Madam Gardner?
I think more fruit in the community would be a good thing.
Very good.
That the dredge materials represent eons of silt that would be valuable soil.
Excellent. Further discussion on the motion to amend.
Fern collector. I think it's a good idea, all of it, because it will improve the soil and be beneficial to the earth and all of us in the community.
Thank you, fern collector. Steve.
I'm the astronomer. There are toxic metals in the sediment that you'll be dredging. So we'll be putting toxic metals onto our gardens.
So you speak against the motion.
I am against the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Astronomer. Further discussion? Elizabeth.
I was the festival director, and holding this great festival once every 2 years just isn't cutting it. We will see enormous benefits in tourism and commerce if we do this.
So the chair will suggest that at this moment we're discussing the proposal to amend by distributing the sedging silt. So the motions pertaining to the festival are out of order. Further discussion? Jeff.
So first a question of process. So if I think it was Steve that talked about, the astronomer talked about the heavy metals.
Right.
And earlier you talked about if we wanted information, we could basically, what was that?
Point of information.
Point of information. So would we ask for a point of information if there is data supporting his statement, or could sure. I just ask that?
No, it's a great question. Say point of information. Are there any data supporting this?
So point of information. Astronomer, do you have any data supporting your statement?
But you address it to me. You address it to the chair.
So, Madam Chair.
Just say point of information.
Point of information.
State your question.
Okay, I see. I got it. So do we have any data supporting the heavy metals in the river bottom?
The chair will ask the astronomer. Astronomer, do we have any data on this? Just make something up.
Yes, we do. We have a USGS report from 1979 where dredged material was assayed to find toxic materials.
Thank you so much, Mr. Astronomer. Further discussion? All right. Are you ready for the vote? So all those in favor of amending the motion by adding the words to distribute the silt material to gardeners to grow fruit trees, please say aye. Make sure you're unmuted for this voting, by the way. So all those in favor, please say aye.
Fern collector, aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
Astronomer, no.
Ferry boat
director,
captain.
No.
Ferry gardener, no.
So fern collector, you just voted. You're voting twice. So we're going to take this just as a straight voice vote. You don't have to identify yourself. Let's try it again. Everybody unmute, please. All those in favor of the amendment to distribute the silt, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
No. No.
The ayes have it. The motion passes. And we will amend the motion by adding the words to distribute the silt to gardeners in the area.
No, no, the no's happen. Point of order.
Right, right. So you can say division. Division. It's a single word. And it means that you doubt the result that was announced. Does somebody want to say that?
Division of the house.
Division.
A division has been called. Daryl, I'm so sorry. Okay, we'll take it again by a different method. See, if that happens, you have to take it again by a different method. So we'll take the vote again. This time I'll ask the members to kindly raise their right hand and hold it up. So all those in favor of amending the motion by adding the words and distribute the silt to raise fruit, please raise your right hand and keep it up. A fern hit collector, I'm assuming your hand is up. Thank you. Hands down. All those opposed, please raise your right hand and keep it up. Oh, the chair apologizes for her error. The motion fails, and we're back to the main motion. So that's a good word to know. I didn't put it in your handouts, but division. You can always call for division. All right, so we're back to the motion to dredge the Fossil River. Do we have any further discussion or amendments on this motion? Nobody seeking recognition? Are you ready to vote? So all those in favor of the motion to using funds in order to dredge Fossil River, please say aye. All those opposed, please say no.
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 Another one bites the dust. Okay. All right. I should have multiple dinosaurs ready. Jeff, did you have a question?
I did. So I was a little slow to use the system. But I did want to ask a question before we took the vote.
Uh-huh.
But basically, if I would have gotten my hand up fast enough, then, but of course that's a reality. If you don't put your hand up fast enough, that's the way it is, and that's what you're stuck with, right?
Yes, but the chair should be particularly attentive.
Right.
Especially with hybrid meetings.
But I would have asked an additional question before we voted. But of course, right now, I can't ask that question.
Nope.
Technically.
Nope.
So
we're done.
All good.
Yep. And since it got defeated, it's kind of moot anyway.
Yeah, it went in the direction of my question anyway. So, right.
Very good. So would anyone like to make another motion?
Let's see.
This Jim, on the
Jim.
Yes, I'm the football coach. I move that we request the superintendent to open a touch football program in the elementary schools.
Very well. Is there a second?
I second it.
So it's been moved and seconded.
Could we say point of order?
You can ask, sure.
We are still on the motion of dredging, and that is the word you use, not germane.
No, we defeated the motion to dredge.
Oh, you're right. I forgot that we'd moved on to the dredging from the I'd forgotten that we'd done both. Okay, good.
So we have the football coach's motion.
Okay.
We request the superintendent to establish touch football in the elementary school. It's moved and seconded. So, Mr. Coach, do you care to speak to your motion?
Getting the football program is the only sport that teaches young dinosaurs how to succeed, and it'll make a difference in the game's life.
Very well. Thank you. Further discussion? Well, the chair will say that she thinks that Coach is just carrying on too much here. I mean, after all he ever speaks about is sports. He never thinks about anything else, including the work of the city. I just think it's really a
point of order.
Major point.
The chair is out of line.
She is? Why?
Insulting the football coach.
Oh, that's right. The chair apologizes. for getting carried away. Okay, back to discussion on the proposal to create Dutch football in the elementary school. Elizabeth, festival director. You have to unmute, though.
Skip me for now.
Okay, further discussion. No, no further discussion?
Yes, I think athletics is an important thing for the young people. It keeps them off their phones. And football for young boys is necessary, I believe, in a school.
Thank you. Further discussion? Nancy?
I think volleyball is a much better sport than football. It would be a better way without direct contact, body contact. I realize it's touch football that the coaches propose, but I think volleyball is a much better game.
So are you speaking against the motion?
I'm speaking against the motion, yes.
Thank you. Steve?
We don't have a football field, so I would like to amend the motion to include money to establish a football field.
People just don't want to keep up with the times.
Just a moment, Madam Fern Collector. Members will kindly seek recognition before speaking. So the chair will issue a ruling that the intent of this motion is to establish a touch football program and that it is not germane to speak about building a field. That will have to be considered as a separate measure. So all those in favor of the motion to establish request the principal to a superintendent to establish a touch football program in the elementary schools, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, please say no.
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 The ayes have it. The motion passes, and we will request that this be done. Thank you so much. So thank you. I wish we had more time and could do more, but I hope it gives you a feel anyway for how all that works with making motions. And we are now going to move on to our next portion, which is who's in charge? Okay, so in all of this, I've been referring to Robert's Rules of Order, newly revised, 12th edition, which is abbreviated RONR. And we recommend the spiral bound edition, which is available only from the National Association of Parliamentarians. Well, I hope that you all won't reveal this to my fellow parliamentarians, but I think this is a terrible book. Robert originally was a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. In fact, one of his first assignments was on San Juan Island. And when he published his pocket manual, it would literally fit in your coat pocket. And that was 1876. And somehow it took off all across the nation. People were thrilled to have a common understanding of how to run meetings. But I believe that his sons and grandsons did that common thing of improving something until you wreck it. And the book is over 800 pages long. I certainly wanted to give up, but I kept on studying. And eventually I realized that there's a core to Robert's Rules that we really need. There's a core that's essential for good and fair meetings. That's what we're trying to share in Jurassic Parliament. Excuse me. And the Robert's Rules people have finally broken down, and they have published Robert's Rules in Brief. This is a good book. You can read this in a weekend, although nobody wants to either. Anyway, I would like to mention that there is a hierarchy of authorities: Constitution, federal law, state law, charter, articles of incorporation, code, bylaws or council rules, special rules of order, and then Robert's Rules of Order. Robert's comes at the bottom. And your rules have higher authority. You may choose the rules that suit your council or board best, and they have higher authority than Robert's rules. Committees are bound by the rules set by council. So I have just one edit for your draft bylaws. They say amendments must be for the Planning Commission. Amendments must be transmitted to the town council for review. Well, it should say for review and approval. for review and approval, because the town council has the final say on the planning commission bylaws. Now I'd like to talk about two different types of organization. One is shaped like a triangle or a pyramid. And at the top, you've got the boss who's in charge. The boss hires people to do the work of the organization, tells them how to do it, and if they do it badly, fires them. One feature of such an organization is that it has accountability or rank. And the people who are near the boss are higher in status than people who are down below. I think that's okay as long as they use their status intelligently, which they have a tendency not to do. So many organizations are like this. You know, every corporation has a CEO, every school has a principal, every army has a general. It's very common to have a boss at the top. And it's so common that we sometimes think of it as being the only kind of organization, but there's actually a whole other kind, which is called a voluntary association. And in a voluntary association, a group of people come together to achieve a common purpose. They set up some guidelines for themselves and they select a leader. But the leader is a peer. The leader is an equal. And your town council, your planning commission, all those bodies are voluntary associations. They're very different. In a voluntary association, each member has an equal right to speak and to try to persuade others to accept their view. During meetings, the chair controls the process so the group can make the decisions. And during meetings, the chair is the servant of the group and the group is the final authority. Now, that's the most important thing I'm going to say tonight. During meetings, the chair is the servant of the group and the group is the final authority. And you have both types of structure. The town council is a voluntary association, but the mayor and staff are an accountability hierarchy. The staff are advisors to the body, but not members of the body. Their participation is limited. They have the right to speak in order to fulfill their function of service. Staff members must seek recognition before speaking, and they do not opine about the content of the discussion unless it applies to their duties or presentation topic. So as for the question that was asked earlier, it would be in order to present information about the history of some ordinance or activity, but not to give a view on it. When should the clerk speak up? Well, we have a list of times when we think the clerk should speak up. First off, obviously, when the clerk is asked a question. Second, when there's a simple administrative point to make, such as skipping an item by mistake. Third, when the clerk is not able to perform their job because of lack of clarity on the part of the council. So if the clerk didn't hear or if the body is not being clear, the clerk should speak up. And then, if permission has been given to make a point of order, when the clerk sees that a serious procedural error is in process or likely to occur. Now, what is each member's individual authority? When you walk out of the town council meeting or out of the planning commission, what is your personal authority? It is zero, nothing, nada, zip. And there's a wonderful phrase that explains that, I think. All members of a governing board share in a joint and collective authority, which exists and can be exercised only when the group is in session. And I love that phrase, joint and collective. That's the essence of your authority. Discussion on motions can and should be vigorous. Express your views freely and don't hold back. But once the vote has been taken, things change. The fact that people have different opinions is a strength. It's a good thing, but we tend to identify with our own position. And when we're defeated, we sometimes take it personally. And this is a mistake because at the end of the day, the body must unite behind its decision. Mm-hmm. It's a basic democratic principle that the decision of the majority voting at a properly called meeting is the decision of the body as a whole, and the minority must make it their decision as well. Now, it's a terrible system, but I hold with Winston Churchill, who said democracy is the worst system of government in all the world, with the exception of those others that have been tried from time to time. So in a democracy, how we decide things is more important than what we decide. And members have a duty to uphold the decision of that body, even if they disagree with it.
That's good work for all of them.
They may express their disagreement in public, but they may not attempt to undermine the decision. Of course, they're free to try to persuade their colleagues during the meeting to change the decision within limits. So we all want to be right. It's human nature to be unhappy when you oppose the decision, but I invite you to commit yourself to a bigger principle than your own views, because after everyone's voice is heard, including the minority, it is the majority that make the decision. So here's a paper I'll send you, Lost the Vote, Don't Sabotage the Council's Action. And I want to quote here Elias Canetti, who said, "The ballot box is sacred because the alternative is blood." And we see this, you know, all across the world, we see societies where decisions are made by force, by blood and iron. And while it's true that our society has many issues and is struggling with many aspects, I think we can still be very proud that we live in a culture that is committed to the democratic process and to making decisions in that way, and not, in the words of Bismarck, by blood and iron. Now, the next section I have is Citizen Advisory Committee pitfalls, and I'm not sure if we should go through all of them, since you do not have the kind of robust system of citizen advisory committees. Elizabeth, what do you think? Should we spend some time on this, or shall we treat it briefly?
I'll go through it briefly, but mostly because I'm not sure what it is, so I don't know if we have it or not.
Okay. Well, let me start, and I'll just kind of whip through it. So, much of this came from Rick Stevens, a planner in Portland. The first biggest confusion with citizen advisory committees is confusion about your job. And I love this quote from the city of Bellevue. "The work of the planning commission is to carry out the instructions of the council." So a planning commission is a body that has been established in order to do a job assigned by someone else. And this can be a challenge. People sometimes want to take more authority than they actually have. So here's a situation, and this really happened. The planning commission is considering a request to lower the setback from 50 feet to 20 feet. And a commissioner asked, "Isn't there a better place in the city to site this hotel?" Well, think for a moment to yourself, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? This guy is confused about the scope of his job. You must answer the questions assigned to you by the council, not propose unrelated alternatives. The commission has not been asked what's the best place to put a hotel. Here's another situation. The Environmental Commission is considering recommending setting aside some wetlands, and a commissioner says, "I think we can't address this until the university report comes out in 5 years. We call that asking for the moon. It's an unfortunate fact of governance that sometimes bodies must make decisions with less than adequate information. The staff have made a recommendation to purchase a historic farm site as a museum, and the commissioner says, "Oh, why are the staff making this recommendation? I think we're wasting our money on staff salaries. Only citizens really understand the issues here." Well, there are many confusions about staff roles. Obviously, we need staff. It would not be possible for residents alone to conduct the business of a modern city or town. And there are other confusions as well. Staff are employees of the city. The commission or committee may not direct them independently of their assigned tasks. And staff have a duty to remind citizen volunteers of the laws, regulations, and fiscal constraints that apply. That's not sticking an oar in, it's doing their job. The staff has carried out a survey, and a commissioner says, "Since I'm a professional surveyor, I can redo the survey to verify it." Well, a commissioner may have valuable particular expertise, but they're recruited to the commission as a citizen, not as a technical expert. Let staff be staff and citizens be citizens. There's been a public outcry about changes to the irrigation district boundaries, and the commissioner says, "Six of my neighbors are very upset about this. They've taken the trouble to come to our meetings, so we should do what they want." Stevens calls this deafened by decibels. Being swayed by the emotional power of a presentation is a common problem. Decisions should be rational, not determined by decibels. If you're serving on the commission or the council, your responsibility is to listen to your constituents while accepting your own responsibility to vote based on your own best judgment, not solely in response to crowd opinion. And here's another paper I'll send you when public pressure is intense about that topic. There's mixed public opinion about a developer's plans to site a shopping center near the main road, and a commissioner says, oh, when we're getting so many different conflicting views on this, I think we should just punt for another 6 months. Well, that's decision delay. A planning commission is expected to render decisions in a timely manner. Some applications suffer death by a thousand nicks. The Arts Commission is considering a report about the museum. The commissioner says, I was on my honeymoon in Norway and I just haven't had time to study this. Commissioners must read their packets before the meeting. Another situation, the commission is discussing plans for a new hiking trail along the river, and a commissioner says, I think we have to analyze what kind of paving stones are best so teeny tiny rocks don't get stuck in the paws of our dinosaur residents. Well, we call that analysis paralysis. We all have a human tendency to delve into the details, and sometimes this leads citizen commissions astray as they spend too much time discussing details that are not relevant to their assignment. We're getting close to the end here. There doesn't seem to be an attractive option for the new community swimming pool. Both sites have environmental issues. The commissioner says, the planning commission and the city can't resolve this issue. I move that we recommend that the city carry out a referendum. So we call that shrinking from hard choices. A commission does not have the right to decline to do its job. That's a waste of public resources. If there are tough environmental issues, it's better for the commission to grapple with them. In our last situation, there's a lot of dubious activity going on in the 110-acre park to the east of town. And the commissioner says, I move that all parks commissioners be issued t-shirts saying Parks Commission and be authorized to issue tickets to offenders. This really happened in a town in California. So this commissioner is obviously confused. Parks commissioners are not police officers. They have a much more limited job. So this is a list of the pitfalls, and I will include these examples in your packet. We also had the question from the Planning Commission about recruitment and recruiting people. So I'm going to refer you to this MRSC article, Successful Tips for Recruiting Board and Commission Members. It's not within the Jurassic Parliament wheelhouse, but you'll find it quite useful, I think. So any questions or comments on these pitfalls? Nope. Nothing? Okay, well, let's look at public comment. And I have to give you another disclaimer. Robert's Rules of Order contains very little guidance on public comment. So in general, this information comes from Jurassic Parliament's experience over 15 years of working with local governments. First, I want to distinguish between a public hearing and public comment. A public hearing is an administrative procedure governed by state law and your council rules, and you must include testimony in the minutes. But the public comment period is different. It's an agenda item governed by your own rules, and we strongly recommend not including public comment in your meeting minutes. Now, why do you have public comment? A council meeting is not a meeting of the public. It is a meeting of the council that is held in public. And the purpose of the public comment period is to allow the council members to become informed about the views of the public. It should be carefully structured. You want to be consistent. It's best to announce the rules at the beginning of each session and provide a written handout. For the sake of fairness, rules for public comment must be enforced consistently. The public must address remarks to the chair, not to individual council members or the audience. Ask staff to time speakers so the chair is not distracted. Some bodies have a visible timer, so speakers know when their limit is approaching. Speakers may not donate their time to someone else. Don't dialogue. Don't get into a back and forth with the public. If the chair starts dialoguing with the public, the situation can quickly become confusing. And if you respond to some speakers but not to others, it can be interpreted as showing bias. One person said to us, "We tell the public that it is a one-way communication to the council." Now, the public may have different expectations. They may come to the meeting looking for answers to specific questions. They may want to argue. They may want their remarks on the record. They may want to raise a point of order. So education is critical. Only the chair may speak to the audience as a whole. Individual council members may not speak to the public or recognize people in the audience. And you want to discourage demonstrations, clapping, booing, and so on. These can chill free speech, both for council members and for the public. Now, the courts have found that local governments may limit the time, place, and manner of public comment. All such restrictions must be viewpoint neutral. And of course, you want to know for sure what your state law says about this. We recommend setting a time period for public comment, for example, 30 minutes. And we like a 3-minute limit for individual speakers. 5, 7, or 9, which I've seen, are too long, and 2 is kind of short. And of course, any of these could be suspended by a 2/3 vote of the council without debate. By the way, if your council or commission has 5 members, what is a 2/3 vote?
Four.
Very good. If a speaker runs over the limit, interrupt and request that they conclude their remarks or simply inform them your time is up. Now, attendees do not have the right to disrupt the meeting. They can't prevent it from going on. But the courts have found that mere words do not usually constitute disruption. There was that extraordinary case in Santa Cruz where somebody was giving the Nazi salute silently in the back, and the courts found that that person was within his rights. In general, residents can say whatever they like during public comment, although school districts may set some limits on comments. And of course, you can have other limits like no campaigning. That's allowed. Now, what about a council member stepping down? A couple of recent court cases have affirmed that a council member is not a member of the public and may not step down from the dais to address the governing body. And Jurassic Parliament agrees with this position. Stepping down amounts to double dipping. The members of the body have ample time to express their views during debate. And this is a new slide, which I will put in the supplemental slides I'm sending you. Now, how do you act on the dais? The chair and the members convey interest and concern by their body language. They should listen to each person speaking as if there were no one else in the room. This is hard. You want to keep a warm and pleasant expression or a neutral face if the speaker is not complimentary. The best approach is to thank each speaker, even if negative, and move on. The chair may provide brief factual information, if appropriate, which must not degenerate into lecturing or criticism. Don't put staff on the spot. Invite people to address questions to staff separately. Council members must not criticize staff in public and must be courteous to them. If the public attacks the staff, do not get defensive and don't get into a hostile exchange. But be prepared, if appropriate, to defend the staff in a calm, positive manner. Because if no response is made and it continues, it can seem as if the body agrees with the criticisms. At the end of the public comment period, the chair should thank the public for attending. Explain again that while this is not a time for dialogue, all comments and questions are taken seriously by the body. Sincerity and warmth on the part of the chair will make a big difference to the experience the public has at your meeting. Now, it's essential, of course, for you to be in touch with your public, to be responsive, and to appear responsive. But given the limitations of the public comment period, we recommend maintaining other channels for dialogue with the public. Community forums, personal discussions, coffee with the council, always less than a quorum, of course, a form on your website, surveys, and so on. We recommend no public comment in the minutes because Capturing these remarks requires a substantial staff effort. Sometimes citizens want corrections to their remarks, which wastes time. Organizations can be found liable on the basis of comments included in the minutes. The purpose of public comment is fulfilled when the members have heard the remarks. Now, if you still want to put something in, MRSC recommends that if your agency chooses, we recommend a summary of the comment period that avoids providing personally identifiable information on individual commenters. Now, since one of the reasons that members of the public want their comments included is to satisfy their sense of themselves, they won't like this, but this is what is recommended. And I told you about MRSC. So we are just publishing tomorrow a new paper, 50 guidelines for public comment. Can you believe that there would be 50 guidelines? I was shocked. This is an update of an earlier paper, and it will be in our newsletter tomorrow, and it's already available on our website.
And so, can I ask one thing about the minutes of public comments?
Yes.
So you're saying in the minute, oh my gosh, in the meeting minutes.
Yes.
We don't write in any of their actual comments, but also not their name either. Like we just say public comment section and, you know, that's it.
Well, either you say public comment was taken.
Okay.
Or you say public comment was taken and the following points were made. The council are idiots. We need to do something about this, whatever, you know, the points without attribution.
But you don't like state their name. Like you're not like Jessica said.
Nope.
The council.
Nope.
Great.
Yes.
Just a particular idiosyncrasy of Utah law is that as public bodies, we are required to make a recording of the meeting, and that recording itself is a public document. So in a way, if somebody's got the patience to listen to the recording, they will hear what someone says. I'm John, and I want to put on the record, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. And what you can do is you can put timestamps in your minutes. Some minutes processing systems do this automatically. But you could put the time at the beginning of each section or something like that. And then people can find it very easily. But to my mind, that's another reason why you shouldn't be putting it in the minutes. Don't put it in the minutes. Thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you.
Less work for the clerk.
I think actually, Tina, one question.
Sure.
One other question. Do you have recommendations on when public comments during the meeting is most appropriate?
I like public comment at the beginning and another session at the end, if it doesn't go on too long. I do not like public comment on each item. I think that's a mistake. That gives the public the impression that they're deciding. But I think that at the beginning is easier for people. They can come and they don't have to spend their whole night waiting. And at the end, sometimes they have stuff they want to say. So that's what we recommend. How about these suggestions? Do they make sense to you for public comment?
Yes.
I actually was at a meeting where approval of the minutes was deferred in order to correct the comments that a member of the audience had made. That is just a total waste of time. It's not a good use at all of staff time and energy.
We've kind of gone back to the end of our meetings. We tried both and they were just too long. So we have them at the end of our meetings now. And I think the Planning Commission does too.
So how long do your meetings tend to run?
Well, you're going to shorten them right up. Hopefully after we get this down, it's going to take us a little bit to get this all down, you know.
Oh, sure.
But, and with the minutes and a lot of the things that you've said, we can cut some time off of them for sure.
Great. Great.
Thank you.
You're entitled to an efficient meeting.
They've been running 4 hours a meeting.
Yeah, that's pretty long. That's pretty long. I'm in favor of shorter meetings.
How do we do it?
So any other thoughts about public comment?
I know I've always been, I know that when, for a while, the last two meetings, we haven't done public comment in the beginning and at the end, but I know even with the long meetings and a lot of it, the inefficiencies that hopefully we can kind of clean up, I still agree that the meetings and the bodies that I've been a part of, having public comment at the beginning and the end actually create more efficient public comments.
Uh-huh. Is there any Utah law on it? I know that there, in some states, if you allow one person to speak, you must allow everyone to speak, even if they only get 1 minute each.
So I have a comment to make. Basically, if I can agree with public comments at the beginning, at the end, as long as there is a time restraint, which there's never been any really real time restraint. So at the beginning of the meeting, people have a tendency to go on and on and on. And they also talk about things that don't have anything to do with the meeting that is coming up. And so, you know, that's another thing. And that's the only comment I have is if we were to have comments, continue to have comments at the beginning and at the end, they should be held to 3 minutes or less. And people get very upset when you can, when you tell them they can only speak 3 minutes.
They'll get used to it. It's very common. It's very common. And we strongly recommend it. We strongly recommend saying, you know, we're going to have 30 minutes for public comment. Each speaker has 3 minutes. We appreciate your adhering to this so that we are not spending our entire lives in this meeting room. And it's also fine to say that the comment must be restricted to items being considered at the meeting or items that are of city interest or village town interest. You know, you can set up those kinds of restrictions. Elizabeth?
Judith has a question here. A lot of the meeting time has been on points that probably could have been discussed outside of the meeting. Now, my question is there a way to arrange the conversations that don't violate the open meeting criteria? Could two members meet and then move that information to another two meet so that you are below the forum structure?
No, because that's what's called a serial meeting. That's a serial meeting. If two people talk and then they talk to two, and then one of them goes and talks to somebody else and somebody else, pretty soon you have a quorum, because in your case, a quorum is three. So as soon as three members of your town council are discussing city business outside of meetings, you're violating the law.
Yeah. Is there any point of discussion that is not to be considered a decision? It's just
doesn't matter. If you're talking about city business, that's violating the law. It's not deciding anything. It's just discussing it. Happened in my hometown of Shoreline. I'm here in Shoreline, Washington. And some years ago, we have a 7-member council, and four of the members were, you know, doing that thing. One talks to two, two talks to three, three talks to four. They ended up paying personal fines. They were found guilty in court for doing it. So you want to check Utah law, and I'm sure that that Municipal Clerks Association or the municipal town, you know, whatever, I'm sure there are associations that will tell you what the law says. For instance, in the state of Florida, you may not talk with one other person outside a meeting. If you're on a local government body, you can't talk to anybody about any city business outside the meeting. Now, I don't think Utah is like that, but you want to know specifically what it is, and you cannot go for efficiency by breaking the law. So this is where study sessions can be helpful, which are indeed open and need to be noticed. But some people don't, in some states, you don't have to take public comment at study sessions. So you can structure them specifically to go into details in preparation for the decision-making at the actual meeting. So also committees can be helpful, you know, although that means people have to spend more time in committees. So Elizabeth, you have your hand up. What's up?
I was going to say one of the things that I think that was really helpful that you brought up, regardless of when and how frequently public comments, is the consistency and the notice ahead of time, and having It publicly stated, so it's on the website, it's in the agenda, and it's used in all different, whether it's the town council or the planning commission, and coming up with that wording. Because I think sometimes people let people go on and on because there's only three people in the room, and so you get used to it, and then you have another topic that it's everybody wants to talk. And so the consistency of saying no one person can speak for more than 3 minutes, having a timer and having the expectations clearly stated would be something that would benefit our community.
I think it benefits every community. And in that paper, that 50 guidelines paper, let me find it here. We do have a sample public comment announcement at the end, which you are free to adapt, but it's a kind of a, you know, it's a balancing act. You want to give the right tone that you're welcoming public comment, and you also want to make it clear that there are limits. So these 50 guidelines will give you plenty of ideas about it. And as I say, it's hot off the presses. We last published a public comment paper in 2018. So a lot has happened in the meantime. I'm publishing our newsletter tomorrow, and the headline is Commissioner Arrested During Public Comment. So there's a lot that's been happening. Any other questions on public comment?
No.
Okay. So let's look at our final section.
I forgot. Okay.
Was there a question?
Well, no, maybe. We'll remember later.
Well, we'll have time for a couple questions at the end. So the last unit here is the right kind of control. The right kind of control. So in order to put this all this into practice that I've been telling you about, that you have to have three things. First, you have to have knowledge of how this system works, which you're getting by attending this session. Second, you have to have a majority on your council who are in favor of civility and this system. One of our Washington State cities 15 years ago rescinded its rules of civility. Well, then you're not going to be able to make this work if you do that. And as a chair, you have to have the personal moxie, the chutzpah, you know, the energy and drive to put it all into practice. It's not easy. It takes energy to do this because the chair must control who speaks when. The chair must control who speaks when. The chair serves as a benevolent dictator, enforcing the rules that the group has chosen. The group has chosen them, but the chair enforces. And individual members must seek recognition before speaking. This is just critical. Don't let people blurt stuff out. Don't let people interrupt. So the chair controls who speaks when. If someone speaks up without being recognized, stop them. If someone speaks out of turn, interrupt them. If someone makes insulting remarks, cut them off. That's your duty. And members have a duty to obey the chair's directions. If they disagree, they can't argue back. So what can they do if they disagree?
Point of order.
Exactly. Point of order or appeal. And I think it is really helpful when we look at this system to remember that we are fulfilling the ancient commitment of our society that it's the people who are going to govern, not the nobility, not the princes, not the people placed over us. It's we ourselves who are doing this, and you all are doing it in your meetings. I really honor you. It's one of the reasons I love this work, is because I think that the work of town councils and commissions and voluntary committees is admirable, and you are doing it out of your heart and your dedication, and not for the money, as we know. So how should you control? Well, a first tip is don't be intimidated by anger. Evolutionary psychologists tell us that anger evolved in the service of bargaining to resolve conflicts of interest in favor of the angry individual. So we don't like it when somebody gets mad, but you have to not take it personally and not be knocked off base by it. You have to respond appropriately. Another important thing is that when you're running a meeting, you're like Napoleon crossing the Alps, you know more about it than anybody else. So you have to guide your members by stating the obvious. You as chair know more about the process than anybody else. You must repeat yourself and state the obvious to help bring everyone along. You want to keep things moving. You want to be brisk and speak crisply, more crisply than in everyday life. I've heard these phrases. Well, I guess the agenda is adopted. I'll kind of get a thumbs up from the board next week. Don't do that. Say the agenda is adopted. Our next item of business is. I will ask the board to decide on this next week. It's different from everyday life, and you want to project a tone that is firm but not harsh. It's firm but not harsh. And I will send in your packet these language tips for meeting management. They've got the situation here and then what the chair can say. And you can paste this to your bathroom mirror. And when you're going about your morning routines, you can practice saying these phrases. They sound odd. You know, it sounds presumptuous, but they're very, very useful. And always remember, when in doubt, ask the group. When in doubt, ask the group. You know, Harry S. Truman said, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. Well, you can get out of the kitchen anytime. The chair believes that remarks about UFOs landing at our airfield are not germane and will ask the council to decide whether the council member may continue speaking on this topic. All those who believe the council member may continue speaking say aye. All those who believe the council member may not continue say no. The ayes have it and the council member may continue speaking, or the noes have it and the council member will cease from speaking. Robert also says the chair should never get excited. So I always like to share this photo as a way to remind us of what it is that we do not want to have happening at our meetings. This is not posed. This is a real life picture. And things are better in this city now. Why do we need rules? I love this quote from Richard Rohr. Win-lose is the only game most of us understand. We have a constant unspoken need for domination and actually find no enjoyment in win-win situations. Now, I'm sure that's not true of you. I'm sure that everyone on this call is at a higher spiritual level. But as for me, if I'm in a fight, I want to win it. And so the thing to do, if you feel yourself hardening into a combat position, is to remember that a meeting is not a fight. It's not a fight. So our vision has two phases. Each member expresses their personal views on topics before your body with vigor, energy, commitment, and respect. Once the vote is taken, personal opinions and political views are less important than the majority vote of the body. Members accept the decision and move on without rancor or bitterness. That's what I wish for you in your town. So you are invited to subscribe to our monthly e-newsletter. I try to keep it short and sweet. And you can subscribe on our website. We also have a blog, which comes out about 3 times a month for more detail. And our advice column, Dear Dinosaur, which I enjoy writing. This is our book, Mastering Council Meetings. And we've offered to sell you discounted copies, if you would like, for your city. And after taking this training, I said that you would be able to apply the principle that the authority of the group is more important than any single individual, follow best practices for discussion, respond to disorder or difficult people, make motions and amendments, avoid common citizen advisory pitfalls, and run effective public comment sessions. So I hope that I've succeeded in giving you these outcomes. This paper is helpful. The chair is not in charge of your meeting. That funny paradox about the accountability hierarchy. Follow 4 fundamental guidelines for successful meetings. Quick guide for city councils. Quick guide for planning commissions. Quick guide for citizen advisory committees. So all of those will be in your reference packet that I'll send before the end of the week. This is what we consider to be the best practices for public comment. Set time limits for public comment and for individual speeches. Have the public address the chair and have the chair respond. Don't engage in dialogue with the public, but have arrangements to answer their questions afterwards. Speakers may not donate their time. On the dais, make the effort to be and to appear to be listening intently to all speakers. So I have this wonderful quote that I love from Samuel Johnson. He said, "Kindness is within our power, liking is not." You can't make yourself like your colleagues on your board or commission, but you can be kind to them. And you must be kind to them because serving on a local government board is like being in a marriage arranged by the citizens. So I think that's something we can all remember. I said we were here to invigorate you to run effective meetings to serve your community. And I have to ask now, how do you feel? Do you feel invigorated?
Well done. Thank you.
Great.
This is Peg. I remembered my question.
Yes, great.
Related to public comments and as a clerk, is it reasonable to encourage people to email or call in comments that they want to present and then like during the staff report period, read those comments or summarize them or whatever?
Well, it's fine to encourage people to send in their comments. I would not read them during the staff report. I would just make sure that the members of the body have access to them. I would include
them on the website?
Well, or in the packet.
Oh, okay.
In the agenda packet that we talked about.
All right.
Okay, this is Gladys. I just want some clarification.
Sure.
Okay, so basically, if we want input from the public, they should be contacting us before meetings, right? Because the only time we should be engaging in conversations with the public is when we hear their comments in the comment period. Is that correct?
Well, you can talk with citizens outside the meeting.
Right, but not in the meeting, correct?
Well, in the meeting, we believe you should not be talking back and forth. You should not be engaging in a dialogue.
Okay. I just want a clarification on that. Thank you.
Yeah. And of course, if you've had other customs and your community is small, people may not like that. So you have to make sure that you're finding other ways of engaging with people. But it just doesn't work very well at meetings. It's not desirable. Cindy, thank you so much for that comment in the chat. You can't. Another thing you can have is you can have a forum. You can have a town forum, you know, which where you are looking more for discussion. In fact, I have a paper on that, on using community forums to engage the public. I'll send it to you. It was written by a colleague. Thank you very much for these nice comments in the chat.
She just can't see yet.
So Nancy is saying that they used to read comments during the public period, total of 20 minutes. You have to think of yourselves. You have to think of not giving yourself a lifetime sentence because you got elected.
Hey, John has a question.
Yes. Yeah.
One thing that occurs quite often in our meetings, in fact, I see on many boards, is that you've got a motion on the floor and it becomes very clear that it's really not ripe for action and it needs to be referred to a committee, referred back to staff.
Right.
Could you talk just very briefly about how that during your debate, so you're debating a motion and it's clear to one or more council members that it's really not right. What do you do?
Sure. So what you do is, let me get my appropriate dinosaur. So we're discussing the motion to raise the parking fees, and it becomes clear that we've had an amendment, and we're talking away, and it seems that it's really not ready. Somebody can move to refer to committee. Move to refer to committee or move to refer back to staff to present at a future date. And move to refer to committee, it takes a second. It's those same eight steps. takes a second. It can be amended. You could maybe change the committee that you wanted to send it to or the time when it's coming back. And it takes a majority vote to pass. And so if it passes, then off it all goes and it comes back again. Now, what people sometimes try to do, John, and that's erroneous, is they say they're going to table it until the next meeting. Table is not for that purpose. Table is used to put something aside briefly, maybe because the governor has showed up and he wants to tell you how enthusiastic he is about the town of Boulder and how you're going to get these ADA sidewalks. So you can say, okay, we're going to table this motion while we hear from the governor. And then after he's finished, you take it from the table. And we have all this on our website, by the way. We have over 250 posts on our website. So if you want to know about table, postpone, refer to committee, agendas, you know, all that stuff, you can get it for free on our website.
So does that motion, the new motion to refer to committee, does the first motion need to be withdrawn before or voted on before that new one is proposed?
No, when you pass this one,
yeah,
it sends the first one and its amendment to that committee.
Okay.
And then it sits there.
You can make a motion.
The committee is ready to send it back, or the staff is ready to send it back.
Okay. Yeah, I think we need to try to clear one more thing before the next, but I guess we don't have to.
And if you want to know more, if you want to really get technical, there, look at on our website or in our book at the phrase precedence of motions. Precedence of motions. It sounds really funny. It sounds British, but that tells you which motions can be made when. People say sometimes, oh, you can't have two motions at a time. Sure you can. You can only have one main motion at a time. But you can have other motions like amendment or refer to committee or call the question. And then that article on precedence will explain it. Well, I hope you feel it's been worth your time. Thank you, Steve. Thank you for the comments in the chat. And thank you all for your dedication. It's really wonderful.
And thank you so much for providing so much in this training, and then also for allowing us to have the recording and all the additional papers and handouts to reference and be able to continue to grow and learn as a community to make sure that we can support each other in holding these rules of order.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. Thank you, Judy. Thank you, Nancy, old friends and new. Jessica, I know Jessica's taken other classes before. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. I'll leave the meeting now and wish you all the best.
Thank you. That was good.